It's been a long week. Atlanta rapper Killer Mike was on the show talking about his unwavering support of Bernie Sanders, and I wondered when Killer Mike was going to run for something. We met one of Georgia's first black police officers, and we took the pulse of Georgia's farm industry with the state's agriculture commissioner. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think back on the week's news. It's time for the break room.
Will your vice presidential choice definitely be a Republican?
Yes, that's true.
Will it be an elected official?
Most likely.
Starbucks is getting sued.
For
putting too much ice in the beverages.
Symbolically, it's one of the biggest announcements in the modern era of animal welfare.
And we are celebrating spring and all things in bloom with a different type of break room today. With me are four Georgians who work in the farming industry. Andrew Thompson is a hog farmer on the line from the town of Dixie down near the Florida border. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Haleen Green grows fruits and vegetables in Atlanta that are native to the Caribbean. Haleen, I am told that you have a nickname. What do you go by?
Haleen Green. The Garden Queen.
We'll see if you earn that. Well done. Whit Whitmire lives in Atlanta and sells beef from his family's North Carolina cattle farm. Just to be clear, Whit, you do not consider yourself a farmer or a rancher. Why?
I do not. My dad is up there putting in the hard work every day with the farm hands, and I paid my dues growing up, hopefully one day again soon. But for now, I'm here in Atlanta slinging beef, as we say.
Yeah, but I mean, I've met like, you know, fancy executives in the ag industry who, you know, wear really expensive suits and cowboy boots, and they'll tell you that they'll describe themselves as a farmer or a rancher, even though it's clear that they've never shoved manure in their life.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of farming friends that are farmers, and out of respect for them and what they do every day and that hard work, you know, it's kind of like calling someone that's not necessarily a chef, you know, you kind of, it's a lot of work and you kind of have to pay your respect. So I call people that do it every day and really truly right. make their living off that hard work a farmer. So at this point in time, I don't have the honor of calling myself a farmer, I don't think.
Whit Whitmire, keeping it real. Matthew Rayford is with us from Brunswick. He is an organic farmer who grows red peas, okra, onions, and watermelons. Matthew, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Your produce sounds delicious. Our first headline today is about work.
Work, 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 work. It's me, I be work, 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 work. It's me, do me,
now, I know for most farmers, the work really never stops, but listen to this story. The small town of Grantville in Coweta County recently put all city employees on a four-day work schedule. The city manager says that it is an incentive for workers to receive few benefits and no longer have access to a retirement plan. It's just a way to please them and attract high-quality talent to the city payroll. Would a four-day work week be an incentive for you guys? As we said, people who are on the farm tend to work 24/7, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I can't even really, I mean, I'm not even on the farm, but the work I've got to do doesn't really ever stop. And, you know, sure as heck, my dad's not stopping anytime soon. So I can't imagine that. But if you live in a world where that's possible, then that's awesome.
Haleen, would you like a four-day work week, or do you like the constant work lifestyle?
Being a farmer, it's a seven-day work week.
I bet.
But who benefits from a four-day work week when, after working how many hours for 4 days, you end up with no incentives for the rest of your life?
Indeed.
Just work. I don't think that's cool.
Yeah, but what's the retirement plan for farmers?
There's none.
None.
There's none.
Yeah.
Keep on growing.
Yep.
I'm sorry that I started this out on a depressing note there, guys, but we're all grateful for the fruits of your labor, and I mean that literally.
Yes.
Well, one thing you got to think about, too, with these city governments, they've got equipment just like farmers. May not be as expensive as ours, but you know, a lot of the tractors and equipment we have cost $200,000-$300,000.
Yeah.
And a lot of times during the year, you don't have but 1 month or 2 months that you're running that piece of equipment. So if you consider a 40-hour week that piece of equipment is only running for 40 hours that week, you're going to have to buy several of them, two or three, just to make it through during the daylight hours. And that's the reason we don't go by no 40-hour week. And with the city needing to go to a 10-hour week for a 10-hour day for his employees, those employees are staying out there and staying on those equipment longer. And then they've got somebody else that's, you know, rotating in, you know, possibly 6 to 7 days, you know, depending on what kind of work they got to have done in the city.
That's a really good point. On the other hand, I suppose they talk about the costs of running the office, having it heated and lighted and lit, I should say, and air conditioned, and that sometimes they think that they can save some money on those costs if they just go to a 4-day work week. Plus, there's also everybody saving costs in commutes. If you do 8 commutes a week instead of 10 commutes a week, maybe there's some money and some sanity that can be saved there, but to each their own. It's Friday, and we're in the break room with 4 people who work in farming. We've got Andrew Thompson of Dixie, Matthew Rayford of Brunswick, Whit Whitmore of Atlanta, and Haleen Green of Atlanta. And we want to thank Savannah Coffee Roasters for donating the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning. They are online at savannahcoffee.com. And we have plenty of coffee to go around, but we do not have a fancy barista to make us drinks for us like they do at Starbucks.
I'll take a mocha.
And I'll have a vanilla, one of the vanilla bullshit things, you know, you whatever you want, some vanilla bull latte kappa thing, you know, whatever you got, I don't care.
Starbucks is in hot water right now over a lawsuit, actually. Company is being sued for putting too much ice into their drinks. The lawsuit contends that some 24-ounce size cups have as little as 14 ounces as whatever that vanilla BS is, and the rest is just ice. So, guys, let's talk about whether or not we're getting our money's worth with Starbucks. I mean, Haleen, I suppose that when you're selling your produce, you can't really cut your product, can you?
No, I don't. With Starbucks, I don't know if I would go as far as a suit because, see, I am very outspoken. And when I'm ordering, if I do order coffee, I would say, no ice, please. Then I would ask for a second cup with ice and have my full cup of coffee poured on ice. So I would get my benefits right then and there. I always get my money's worth.
That is the way you do it. That is the way. That's
Haleen
how a
Green,
pro
the garden
does it.
Queen.
Yes, right. I'm Haleen yeah. Green, the garden queen.
Whit, do you ever go to Starbucks?
I absolutely do not. I like to support a lot of our local coffee shops here and hang out and do my work there. I'm kind of a coffee shop nomad. I think it's ridiculous that they're going to a suit, but you know what? I understand their anger because that's like opening up a bag of potato chips to a whole darn bag full of air. You know, there's nothing more irritating. So too much ice and not enough coffee, you know, when I'm trying to get that caffeine in the morning, you know, that's no good. So
okay. Let's talk about something a little more serious. A new Pew survey finds that the ideological gap between highly educated Americans and less educated Americans is growing. If you have been to graduate school, you are now twice as likely to hold consistently liberal views as opposed to consistently conservative views. And that invites, to me, the obvious question, does knowledge support a liberal worldview, or is it just that universities simply indoctrinate a liberal worldview? Then we've got a recent article in The Atlantic looking at the assumption that most college campuses lean left. We've got two scholars who recently set out to investigate kind of a more nuanced question. What is life like for the minority of college professors who are cultural or political conservatives? Andrew Thompson, well, first of all, what's the is there any truth to the stereotype that farmers are conservative?
Well, you know, I didn't go to college. As soon as I got out of high school, or even when I was in high school, I left at lunchtime, went to the farm and worked. It was kind of hard for me to give in to my wife to let our kids go to college, and which I'm glad they did. But, you know, one thing that stuck in my mind when I read this article was that, you know, my son's in college now, which he lives at home. He drives back and forth. But at nighttime when he comes in, you know, we got a great relationship, a good Christian family, and he tells both my wife and I, you know, what his college professors are saying and what their views are. But yet, with that, that's fine. Let him do it, you know.
Yeah.
But we get to tell him, and he knows the way we've raised him, and we get to tell him our side of the story. So, you know, that makes it, we can counter that what I say is crap that the professors are trying to teach them in the school.
Matthew Rayford, organic farmer in Brunswick, how does that compare with your experience?
You know, I straight out of high school, I went in the military. So by the time I even stepped on a college campus, I was way past being an adult, and I was already, you know, I'd already been to a war. So I had a different perspective when I walked into college. I think one of the things that needs to ensure to happen is that people learn how to work. Farming's work. And I think that when people learn how to work, their worldview looks a little bit different when they understand what it actually takes to, you know, do things like produce food and produce a product of any sort. And then as they start to have to, you know, learn or become more educated, they start to understand that things are not as easy as people tend to say that it could be.
Right. Hey, Lean or Witt, how did college and or farming shape your worldview?
Well, I'm one of the lucky ones. I had businesses and went to nursing school and nursed and helped people way before I went to Georgia State University at 62. And so when I went to Georgia State University, all the younger students thought I was the professor. And all I talk about was farming. Going to Georgia State at 62, you don't have to pay. It's called GSU 62. And I enjoyed going to college. I took everything there was to offer, 5 solid years at the university. And then I became tired, and I went right back into my farming. So I don't have the same views as all the others of today. Mm-hmm. I love to work, and I love farming.
Well, let's stay in politics for our next topic. Ted Cruz may have bowed out of the presidential race this week, but people are still talking about something that happened during one of his campaign stops. A little boy heckled Cruz during a rally, yelling, "You suck." And this is how Cruz responded.
You know, in my household, when a child behaves that way, they get a spanking.
Now, ironically, this happened just days after a big new meta-analysis landed in the Journal of Family Psychology confirming that spanking is counterproductive. Evidence says so. It leads to increased aggression, increased antisocial behavior, mental health and cognitive problems. The long and short of it is it essentially has the opposite effect that parents often believe it will have. So what do we think, guys? Was Cruz promoting abuse, or was he just putting a bratty kid in his place? Whit, why don't you start?
Well, you know, I guess that still stands to be determined, the effectiveness or how much it really screws up, so to speak, anyone. But I think he's probably just was pandering to the, you know, demographic and crowd and his constituents, if you will, and trying to say something that they wanted to hear. So I don't think, you know, spanking children, whether, you know, that's a parent's own decision, I guess, ultimately. And I'm 26 and I don't have kids coming anytime soon. So it's not something that I'm too terribly worried about at the moment. To each their own, I guess.
Andrew Thompson, if you hear a politician advancing spanking, is that a plus or a minus in your book?
That's a plus. You know,
when
I was growing up, I've got a lot of spankings, which what was so great back then was my father never hit me right then. He said, "Okay, son, this is what you did wrong. Tonight after supper, you're going to get a spanking." And you know, he came to me and sat down on the bed with me and said, "All right, do you know what you did wrong?" And then he spanked me. He never spanked me out of anger at that moment. And I use that, you know, with my kids. I'm 52 years old, and I've whooped my kids, not as many times as I got it. But to this day, my kids will tell anybody, do they respect me? And boy, I respect my mother and father. And the main reason I respect them was because they kept me straight and they spanked me. And even teachers back years ago, you learn respect. Now, yeah. You see a kid walking in a grocery store and a parent and the kid does something and the parent slaps him right then. No, that's wrong. You don't never hit somebody out of anger. You can do it later.
Hey, Lean, do you have kids? Have you had to deal with this question for yourself?
5 children and 6 Ooh. Grandchildren.
Ho!
When I was growing up, I'm taking the praise. I did not give a lot of trouble because I hate spanking. I think the little boy was just repeating something that adults said around him, and it was just a repeat. But for my children, they got very little spanking because I have a big eye and a twisted mouth. And I think they felt spanked when I took a look at them and twisted my mouth like my mom used to do to me. And I stared, and trust me, they knew what that meant.
If it works, it works.
Yes.
We are in the break room right now talking about the week's news with 4 folks from the ag industry in Georgia, Andrew Thompson, Matt Rayford, Haleen Green, and Whit Whitmire. Let's move on to our next topic. Tax day is thankfully behind us, or it is now once again ahead of us, depending on how you look at it. The IRS, of course, does not always get the warmest response.
Taxman!
Taxman!
Now, this thing called the Republican Study Committee, which includes members of Congress, called recently for the complete elimination of the IRS. Folks, would we like to see the IRS go away? How then would we collect the money that we need to pay for schools and roads and, I don't know, farm subsidies? Matt Rayford, what do you think?
Well, I mean, after reading the article, it didn't say they were going to stop taking taxes. They just said
but you need an agency to collect the taxes, right?
Right, so they still are going to use the Treasury to do that. So it's not like they really got, they're just getting rid of one entity that they're paying a lot of money to do all of that. So from what I'm seeing, it's not like they're getting rid of taxes. They say get rid of the IRS. They never said, because how are they going to pay their salary?
Right, indeed. Andrew Thompson is...
They get paid through taxes, so they're just, all they're really trying to do is whitewashing. We're just trying to say, let's get rid of this, and getting people kind of riled, thinking that it's not going to change taxes. That nowhere in this article they said they were going to drop taxes, make taxes fairer, cut subsidies. They didn't say any of that in there. So I just think
so.
The gentleman
from Brunswick thinks it's
the climate that we're in.
Indeed. So the gentleman from Brunswick thinks that this is just pandering, just a symbolic move. Andrew Thompson, have you had any run-ins with the IRS? Is it an institution that is beyond saving?
Yes, we've been audited a few years back, and you know, I'm wondering if more is the problem is if it's the employees, because you know, me looking at government agencies and speaking with some of them or seeing a little bit of it, and I'm no expert, but you know, as a farmer, you hire somebody, if they're not doing a job, you can fire them pretty easy. You know, so some of these government officials, employees, do they know how hard it is to get fired, so they get their little cushion job and they slack off. Is that our problem?
Perfectly fair question. Let's do one more political topic. Now that Donald Trump is the apparent Republican nominee in the presidential race, the question now becomes who will become his running mate. One person who has not shied away from potentially wanting the job is former Georgia Congressman and Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He told the New York Times, quote, "If a potential president says I need you, it would be very hard for a patriotic citizen to say no." I wonder if that calculus would hold true for Gingrich if it was Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton asking him to be VP. But Whitmire, what would a Trump-Gingrich ticket look like to you?
Oh, Lord. I mean, my personal opinion that some may not agree with is that, I mean, I'm not going to be voting for him. But, you know, I think it's all about, you know, the best fight and, you know, having as many parties. I wish that there was more third-party representation. No one keep. You know, talking about Gary Johnson or libertarians, you know, maybe kind of a dream in the clouds, but, you know, I'm not going to be voting for a Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump ticket, but those are my personal opinions, and everyone, you know, is entitled to their own, and I appreciate them all, so.
Is there anyone in the break room right now who would go Trump Gingrich?
Not I.
That's a deafening silence. Okay, let's end on something a little bit lighter. I know that you guys all grow or sell food. Would you consider yourselves foodies? Okay, it's a weighted term, and clearly we're not super comfortable with it, but there is a huge gap between what foodies talk about in person and online and what Americans actually eat. AllRecipes.com is the most popular English-language food website in the world, and thanks to its excellent search engine optimization, the site's recipes constantly appear at the top of Google search results for food. But as was discussed in a recent Slate article, the actual dishes tend to be quite amateur and not necessarily the most appealing. Guys, where do you get the recipes for all the wonderful things that you raise or rear? Haleen?
Well, I am unique. I was born in Jamaica. And so I am taking my foodie from an island style. Everyone enjoys the foods that I prepare and my family prepare. And so therefore, we are called Jamaican foodies.
Matthew Rayford, are you as good in the kitchen as you are in the out in the farm?
Well, funny you say that. I actually own the restaurant in Brunswick called The Farmer and the Larder. I was a chef first. I consider myself to be a chef farmer. So I've been cooking since I've probably been in the kitchen since I was 9. So about almost 40 years now, I've been inside of a kitchen. So. And then I was raised cooking on the farm with my great-grandmother and my grandmother, my mom and my dad. So it's always, we've always been around food. So,
yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, I do research just like anybody else when it comes to cooking from time to time if I find something new that I want to do. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always in the kitchen cooking. So, I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm in the restaurant right now having this conversation.
Awesome. All right. Andrew Thompson, last word goes to you. What do you like to do with the hogs that you farm?
Well, now we slaughter here on the farm and process, so we have an endless supply of pork. My wife cooks for our employees. We have about 18 employees, so she cooks 3 days a week for them. And talking about recipe books, you know, her best ones, one is a Georgia Farm Bureau cookbook, and
okay. She
got two or three church cookbooks. You know, these were compiled from people that wasn't getting paid for it. It was just old recipes that they grew up with. And there's some great recipes in there.
Yeah, that old school oral tradition beats anything you find on the internet any day. We're out of time for the break room. Thanks to our All Ag Industry panel, Andrew Thompson of Dixie, Matthew Rayford of Brunswick, Whit Whitmire of Atlanta, and Haleen Green, also of Atlanta. Have yourself a great weekend, guys. Try to get some rest.
Thank you.
You too.
You too.
And that's it for today's show. We want to hear from you. Let's ask you, do you want to see Donald Trump's running mate be Newt Gingrich or somebody else? And if you're in the never Trump camp, is there a VP pick that could change your mind? Tweet us at OST Talk or call 404-594-57, and we might use your comments on the air. That's it for On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusa. Celeste Headlee is back at you on Monday. Have yourself a great weekend.